Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And we welcome you back. On our way back to this conversation, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily contents on arts, culture, food design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. We all saw the news about what just happened in Afghanistan with American soldiers, one, maybe more, who just got drunk and went wild and killed 16 people, many children, burned to death as well in Afghanistan. All that's been going on there is in the last month and last year. It's the longest war in American history. Many people are saying it's time to end it now. Afghans are saying it. Americans are saying it. Two interesting pieces were written today in The Nation magazine, and we're joined by Robert Dreyfus, investigative journalist and a great note in Nation magazine contributing editor, and George Zornick, Washington reporter for The Nation magazine. And Robert and George, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Yeah, thanks
for having us.
Here with Anthony McCarthy. So let's talk about this. And folks, join us at 410-319-8888 about where we are with this war. And Robert, let me begin with you. Just in terms of what we've seen and the way you began the piece you wrote in The Nation today, to me was very striking, just even the first line, that Iraq had its Haditha and now Afghanistan has its Panjwe. What just happened is just, I think, hard for many people to take, but it really is in many ways just the story that hit the headlines this week. This has been going on over and over again in Afghanistan. This is not a new story.
Well, I think it's wrong to say this has been going on over and over. This is really the worst, by far, incident like this in the sense of a deliberate murder.
Yes, yes.
16 Afghan civilians. But it follows a whole history of bombings of wedding parties, of countless dead, you know, in night raids and drone strikes and atrocities like that kill team that killed a few, I think, three Afghans 2 years ago. And then this year we had the burning of the Qurans, and also earlier this year the images of the soldiers urinating on corpses that I guess were killed in battle. I mean, there's been a whole series of horrible incidents, and this one may be the worst, and I think, like Haditha in Iraq, it could be kind of a turning point for the war.
This is Anthony McCarthy. I just want to ask, oftentimes I've had conversations over the last couple of weeks about the burning of the Quran and then this horrific story that just kind of unfolded in the last couple of days. But I think oftentimes it is lost on our American audiences, like the protests that resulted from the burning of the Quran. Could you just explain to our listeners why this turn from that one incident? There have been so many protests, so many calls for reprisal. explain to us how that happens.
Well, I have to tell you, I don't feel like that's a particularly great atrocity to burn some Qurans. First of all, it was a mistake. Second of all, the Taliban burns hundreds of Qurans whenever they burn down a girl's school in Afghanistan, which they
correct.
Do routinely. So let's not get too outraged over the burning of these holy books. The fact is the protests that followed that were whipped up by the Taliban, by anti-American warlords and various chieftains there and other political types who, you know, tried to fuel anti-American outrage because there's a lot of resentment in the country about the American presence there. it's not unlike the outbursts and deaths that followed the Prophet cartoons in Denmark a number of years ago. I mean, yes, there's a great sensitivity to the holiness of the Quran in the Muslim world, but not every Muslim will go out and rampage when a Quran is desecrated. So this is a very primitive and backward culture. Part of the problem with the United States is we've been unable to figure it out, understand it, understand the social and religious and tribal and ethnic underpinnings of that country, even though we've been there for more than a decade. And that's one of the reasons why it's just time to get out. We don't get that.
But it seems what we've done here, and I think some of the what's happened in much of the media, which you look at the Associated Press, you look at Reuters, you look at NBC Today, USA Today, the killings, the threat in Afghan mission, New York Times igniting fears of a new wave of anti-American hostility. I mean, what most of the media is treating this as, though, it seems to me, is a publicity problem.
Well, it's far more than that.
I mean, no, I know it is. I'm saying, yes, it is. But that's how the media is treating it.
you know, of course, I mean, it's interesting that when we don't know the circumstances around this particular massacre, whether it was one soldier or more. It seems to be one only, but we'll find out. He may have been motivated by anything from, you know, anti-Muslim fanaticism to just, you know, hatred for the Afghans because of the recent assassinations following the Quran burnings, of, you know, assassinations of U.S. soldiers and officers and so on. But but the fact is, there's already talk about PTSD and other kinds of things, and, you know, people trying to make excuses about the fog of war and about the stress of combat, and I get all that. But you don't hear that when some Afghan blows up an American convoy or something like that. You don't hear that, well, maybe that Afghan was under, you know, PTSD kind of stress because his family was killed, because his village was bombed, because he, you know, for whatever reason. I mean, the people who do horrific violent acts are often under stress, and that's not an excuse for them. What this person did, if it happened in Des Moines, Iowa, by a Muslim who went out and killed 16 Americans, including 9 children, you know, it would be a cause célèbre across this whole country, and people would be calling for shutting the border down. So, you know, one person's terrorist is another person's PTSD sufferer.
Let me go over to George, who's also joining us. George Zornick, your piece really had more to do with the effect of this war on America and where Americans are and what effect it may have on the re-election of Barack Obama.
Yeah, that's right. There was some polling that came out today that was conducted after the terrible events this weekend, but during a stretch of time when we heard a lot of news about the Quran burning protests and the Afghan soldiers turning on their American counterparts. And what it showed was a really shocking decline, or steep decline, in American support for the war. For several months, almost a year leading up to the death of bin Laden, support for this war was flagging pretty seriously. And then for not an entirely logical but certainly an understandable reason, the numbers rebounded when bin Laden was killed, because people were asked, well, do you support the war in Afghanistan? They thought, well, you know, bin Laden's dead, so sure. But that bump has receded, and now we see levels back to what it was basically before bin Laden was killed, and we see strong pluralities of people who just don't believe the war is still worth fighting.
One of our listeners just wrote in on Facebook about the war, questioning where the war is and why we're there. Brian Sanders, I believe his name is. Is that, do I have that right? Let me see. Yes, Brian Sanders wrote in, we should never have gone there in the first place. So let's get out now. I think that there's one thing about people after the attack on 9/11, saying there's some, many who agreed and some who disagreed with going after Al Qaeda, but the war itself, to many Americans, has never made much sense.
No, it hasn't, and it certainly receded quite a bit from the public view while the war in Iraq was at the forefront. And now that that is, has more or less wound down, people are turning their attention back to it again and still not terrifically fond of it. I think one thing for Obama that's sort of helping him is that as much as people don't like the war, his Republican counterparts like it even more than he does, you could say. Mm. You know, last year or earlier this month, Leon Panetta said, revise the timeline down a little bit, I think not as early as it needs to be, but he said, well, maybe we can start winding down the combat mission in the middle of 2013, and Mitt Romney came out and he called that naive and misguided. He is pushing for a longer engagement. So I think Obama feels that though people probably want him to get out faster than he plans to, you know, and this is electoral politics, he will just always contrast himself with the position of Mitt Romney, the presumptive nominee, and he will come out looking better.
I'm curious, though, George, how can... I understand the contrasting himself, Romney and Santorum and others, but how can this president continue to sell, and I hate to use that term, but sell our mission in Afghanistan? I was reading a lot of these reports, including your story today. I was reading a lot of these, and Americans are absolutely outraged that we are losing soldiers there.
Yeah, I think that's a non-negligible danger for him. I think even you saw people like Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum coming out today and saying that they're not sure the mission
is
doable. And so even, you know, even if people accept, okay, well, most Republicans, or certainly Mitt Romney, are a little more extreme on this. You know, when they'll step back a little bit, I think there's a danger for Obama that they will step back from the electoral process and just say, look, if this war is not actually doable, if the mission is one that cannot be accomplished, then why are we continuing to spend this money? And more importantly, you know, to harken back to John Kerry's famous quote during Vietnam, how can you continue asking people to die for this? I mean, I don't mean to be too dramatic about it, but if you have the family of a young man or young woman who inevitably will be killed in the war zone in the coming weeks or months, I think if people start to really look at that and pay attention to that, they'll wonder, for what reason is this happening? You know, one thing that really turned people against the war back in 2004, 2005 was Cindy Sheehan, when she went out and camped down at President Bush's ranch and really kind of humanized the cost of war for people. So I'm not suggesting something exactly similar would happen, but I do think that the more people pay attention to the casualties and the seeming impossibility of accomplishing this mission, that it could be, you know, very dangerous for Obama politically.
And on the way to the phones here, 410-319-8888, Hank is the first caller up. We'll go to Hank in just a second. Is Robert Dreyfuss, I mean, when we talk about ending the war, we've had these debates in the show since the beginning of this war. How do you see that process taking place? People say end it now, but what does that mean?
Well, there's two ways to end it. One is just to, you know, pack up and leave, and the other one is to try to prepare for the most stable Afghanistan to follow our withdrawal, which the original idea was to try to negotiate some sort of deal with the Taliban and Pakistan and possibly Iran and create some, you know, rebalanced Afghanistan government that would stay in place long enough for us to get the heck out of Dodge, and then if it all falls apart, no one will remember or think about it. I personally don't think that most Americans give a damn about Afghan civilians who were killed. I don't think people care about Afghans.
Yeah.
I think Americans are more concerned with March Madness and what's on TV tonight, unfortunately, than with dead Afghans, even little girls who are set aflame by some American soldier. But the fact is that in 2009, when Obama twice surged the troops, he basically cravenly caved in to the military because he didn't want to look weak. The military was demanding a surge, and Obama gave it to them. I think out of pure political cowardice. This time things are a little bit different in that he has the, you know, the possible support of the American public, not because they care about dead Afghans, but because Americans are just sick and tired of the stupid war and they don't know what we're doing over there. But I don't believe that this president has suddenly found a great profile in courage, and I think he will, kick the can further down the road. He's not going to do anything really exciting and dramatic in this election year because he's going to run against a crazy hawk, and you know he'll stick to his timetable. I've already said repeatedly that we're steadfast. This, you know, today they've said we're steadfast in our timetable for 2014. So I think that Obama will continue to be a political coward.
Let us open the phones here, 410-319-8888. And as we talk to, you just heard Robert Dreyfuss, investigative journalist, Nation Magazine contributing editor, and George Zornick is with us, a Washington reporter for the Nation Magazine. Anthony McCarthy and I here at WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner, and number is 410-319-8888, and Hank, you're on the air.
How you doing, David?
Very well. Welcome, Hank.
Hey, you know what I want to find out? You know what I want to, Mr. Steiner? I wonder if George Bush and Mr. Cheney would have been so pressed to rush in, right, if they knew that there was such thing as a Nuremberg trial waiting for them, right, for their crimes. And if it's Americans over there shooting and killing people and burning them up, because they got post-stress, right? But, I mean, if somebody over here did that to us, we'd be hailing them, nail them to the cross. So if we do it, why shouldn't they ask for the same thing? And that's my whole understanding and right? It just come out. Whether it falls flat on its face or not, right, the longer we stay there, the more problems we create. And if we out of there, we don't, and they kill themselves, it's not our problem. Hello?
I'm listening to you, Hank.
I mean, it's really not. We keep sticking in the hornet's nest, and when the bee stings us, we holler about stop stinging us. Stop sticking your finger in the hornet's nest. You won't get stung. Everybody does not believe in our culture or our rules, and that's what makes us human, right? We have a choice as to what we believe in. If you believe in the Quran, you believe in the Quran. If you believe in the Bible, you believe in the Bible. If you believe pink is pink, then believe pink is pink. I have no right to tell you that pink is blue. Right? And so, I shouldn't punch you in the eye and make you say pink is blue. Period. Leave them people alone. Get out of there. That's getting my human family members from America killed. Because if they come over here, trust me, I'm going to send them back where they came from. But I'm not going to go over there and bother them whatsoever. Because that's what they do. And that, this is what I do. And I defend what I do.
Thank you, Hank.
Always good to hear from you, Hank.
I'm curious, though, to be fair to the president, Robert, and George, the president told us in the 2008 campaign what he was going to do, that he would begin the drawdown in Iraq and focus attention on Afghanistan. And so a lot of this outrage at the president is understandable, but we've known what the timetable was going to be for some time.
Well, I may be misremembering, but I'm not completely sure that he outlined a plan to surge troops not once but twice. I think he talked about focusing on the war and bringing it to a responsible end, and I think many people inferred different things about it. Mm-hmm. But I think the surge, the two surges, were that, as Robert mentioned, was something that he caved into the generals on and wasn't something that he explicitly ran on in the 2008 election.
Robert, you're about to say something?
No, I mean, I agree with George on that. I think that he did say that Afghanistan was the right war, and I think that's really a unfortunate phrase that began with the John Kerry campaign in 2004 when they were trying to shift focus away from Iraq, and it seemed like it was safe to say, oh, you know, we should have gone into Afghanistan because that's where al-Qaeda came from, and Saddam had nothing to do with that. And so they were kind of trying to shift the focus away from Iraq, where the real war was happening back at that time. I mean, in 2004, there wasn't even an insurgency in Afghanistan, really. But as that began to grow and develop, starting in 2006 and so in Afghanistan, you know, more and more people started to worry about it, and Obama did, in fact, say, yes, that's where we're going to, you know, make our stand. But that said, he didn't have to do what he did. The first surge was really a confirmation of a plan that was developed during the Bush administration at the end of 2008, and Obama just ratified it by sending an extra, I think it was 10 or 12,000 troops there. The second one, however, was the result of a three-month-long policy review that Obama carried out under great pressure from General McChrystal and General Petraeus. And that's where he eventually caved in, and that's all in Bob Woodward's book. I mean, it's brilliantly laid out in that Obama's Wars book.
You know, and the war, it was, I think for many Americans, the war in Afghanistan in the beginning was very confusing. I mean, in the sense that people, because of the attack, people supported it. I remember as it began, we actually were the first media outlet in the country to interview Hamid Karzai from a cave in Afghanistan. And he didn't even know what day it was. That was his first question. But I think because at that point there was a lot of hope among Afghan Democrats and people who believed in a better world for women and everybody else in Afghanistan. Things were going to change, but that rapidly deteriorated. And then so we've found ourselves, again, not knowing history, and then found ourselves immersed in a war that has increasingly making little sense, makes no sense whatsoever. So, I mean, and when you look at both the things you wrote, Robert, both of our alleged allies, Afghanistan and Pakistan, are just, I mean, our relationships with both governments has deteriorated into a morass that I think we can't get ourselves out of.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a horrible mess. The Pakistanis, as you probably know, they armed and created the Taliban 15, 16 years ago. They supported them all along with Saudi Arabia. There were only three countries, Pakistan one of them, that recognized the Taliban regime. On the other hand, people like the Clinton administration and a number of other U.S. officials and oil companies had very happy relations with the Taliban for years after they took over. And there's no reason we had to go charging in there like 100,000 ugly Americans after 9/11, because we could have negotiated with the Taliban probably over 6 months or a year and gotten them to hand over bin Laden and made some kind of deal with them. And, you know, it would have been ugly, and who wants the Taliban to run the country? Nobody. But it's better than going to war. And I don't, you know, I know there are some people, human rights advocates and women's groups and so on, who would maybe disagree with me, but I'm sorry, we don't go to war 9,000 miles away so girls can go to school over there.
No, I hear what you're saying exactly. I mean, there are women who have been in the studio and on our phone, in our program from Afghanistan, women from Rawa, the women who have worked in the villages who want Americans to leave. I mean, it's not... Because the situation may rapidly deteriorate for them, but it's not our place. And they also think it's worsening their situation and strengthening the Taliban, now weakening it by our continued presence.
Don't. I mean, let's be fair. There are a lot of people who are worried that if we pull out, things will get worse and the Taliban will take over. And I don't know if that's true. It may be a civil war. It may be a way of stabilizing it. Who knows? But whatever it is, you know, it's way past the time when we can... stick around for another 5 years to figure that out, or 10 years.
So, gentlemen, I appreciate you with being here. And, Rob, before you go, I'm just very curious. This is a totally different take, but I've been reading what you've been writing us also about Iran. And what's your analysis right now about where we are in terms of vis-a-vis a potential war with Iran?
Oh, there's not going to be any war with Iran.
I didn't think so either.
The Obama administration is the last thing they want. The Israelis are not going to attack Iran without American permission, and they're just not going to get it. And anyway, they don't have the capability of really doing much damage themselves in the first place. So this is all just political talk. This is Netanyahu is trying to shift the discussion away from the Palestinian issue, and he's done that successfully by saying Iran, Iran, Iran every time the president says Palestine, Palestine. And now you have he's trying to create an issue, a wedge issue for the Republicans to go after Obama on, so they can say he's weak on Iran. And you know, the only way he can show he's not weak is what? To bomb the country? Because everything he's done is pretty much what Romney says he would do. So I think this is all just a lot of, political theater in an election year.
And speaking of political theater, George, round out before we end this part of our conversation, how you think this is going to affect the general election at all between President Obama and whoever it is going to be the Republican candidate?
I think very little. I would echo Robert's comments that unless something really dramatic happens, people aren't really all that concerned with the war. And I think that, you know, Obama will probably score some points off Romney if he continues to call for a longer engagement, which is exactly why I think he may not do that or may not do it aggressively. I really don't think the impact on this election is going to be all that huge. I think, if anything, the increasing public disdain for the war may steal up Obama in his when he has these debates with his generals, assuming he wins re-election in 2013 and 2014. They'll no doubt be urging him to stay longer. There will be others within the White House urging him not to do that. If anything, and I'm not certain that it would happen, I think the eroding public support would kind of steal his backbone to standing up to the military. But I'm just not honestly sure what would happen.
I want to thank both of you. This has been an interesting conversation from the point of view of two of our nation, the Nation magazine writers, George Zornick, you just heard, Washington reporter for the Nation magazine, Robert Dreyfus, investigative journalist, and a Nation magazine contributing editor. Robert and George, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Anthony and I will be right back, so don't go away.